What's going on, everybody? We are back here at Always Talking Ball to break down some Sweet 16 matchups on Thursday and Friday night. I'm your host, Tyler Noe. Lance Barton is here as well. And we're ready to rock, Lance, right? I mean, how about that last weekend of basketball?
March Madness just always seems to deliver, man. There's just not a better tournament in the entire world. Like somebody commented on one of our videos here recently and said, what about the World Cup? Get that out of here. Get soccer out of here. The NCAA tournament, it delivers every single year. You know, we had, after the first round, going into the round of 32, we had four double-digit seeds, so a fourth of the round of 32 were, double-digit seeds. We, you know, had your Cinderella stories with, you know, Oakland, especially. I mean, Duquesne kind of got overshadowed by Golkey and Oakland, the Golden Grizzlies. But we don't have any major Cinderellas because I don't consider NC State a Cinderella. We don't have any major Cinderellas in the Sweet 16 this year like we've had the last few years because, man, in the round of 32, chalk pretty much flew as every single team that was favored won their game straight up except one, and that was Baylor. Just incredible game, multiple overtime games. That game last night with Texas A&M Houston was just nuts. March Madness just delivers every single year.
Please, 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 if anyone of any importance is out there listening to this little old podcast, absolutely, positively, do not touch this tournament. It's almost the most perfect thing we have in collegiate sports, maybe all of sports, like you said. We don't need expansion. We saw that last Tuesday night when Virginia, you know, put up their stinker in the first four game. We don't need expansion. I know there's all kinds of conference commissioners out there that are pushing for expansion.
Here it comes.
And those conference commissioners were handed it to them, man. I mean, they just got it. Their teams, and yes, I'm talking about Greg Sankey. We'll just go ahead and get to it. Greg Sankey came out and said, we need to look at, you know, the qualifications for the mid-majors, and we need to, you know, they said there's some quality teams that are being left out of this tournament, some quality high major teams. Like, and I mean, this was like right around the time we were watching Virginia put up 14 points in the first round, the first four. And, you know, then his conference goes on to lose in the first round, you know, five games as the higher seeded team and as the favorite, including the Kentucky Wildcats against the Oakland Golden Grizzlies and Argyle himself, Jack Golkey. That was probably
Uncle Golkey's a hero, bro.
Probably the game of the day on the first day, I'd say. Definitely the biggest upset of the tournament. And I mean, if you looked at that dude's shot chart for the season, 347 3-point attempts and 8 2-point attempts. That's just unbelievable. He hit 10 out of 20. They won 80-76, and Jay Wright absolutely nailed it after the game, where he said that era that we went through of the freshman, the one and done, where Kentucky and Duke were just getting all these one and dones. Duke got a championship out of it. Kentucky got a championship early out of it, but they got a near undefeated season out of it. It's just not going to work in the NIL era. And as we've seen, these guys are sticking around for 5-6 years. Ever since COVID, we've had some super seniors. But I mean, Jack Golkey's 24 years old out there, and he may not be as good, obviously, as those first round picks, but he's out there. I mean, like you said, on any given night, he can perform just as well as them. And he's 6 years older. I mean, he's a man amongst boys out there, literally. And that was a fun game to watch.
Yeah, and we saw the young freshman for Kentucky too on the biggest stage. It looked like they had stage fright. I mean, Reed Shepherd legitimately had that proverbial faraway look on his face because things just weren't going right. And it was really the first time that you saw, because he had some big moments this year in some big games at the end of games where he was making plays, and he just had a faraway look on his face. And I mean, you said it best, man. You texted me during the week and said NCAA or March Madness. You said March Madness pressure is real. And it really is. That tournament pressure is real. We saw the guy that some people are projecting to be the number one overall pick in Reed Shepherd just kind of falter there. And hey, look, I'm going to eat some crow. We do this all. You've done it before. I've done it before. We come on here and we just shoot straight. We're honest with you. Last week, we gave our March Madness preview episode, went through the bracket, gave our Final Four national championship picks, and your boy here stepped out. and said, give me Big Blue Nation, Kentucky going to the national championship game to play UConn for the chip. And I pick Kentucky literally in the national championship game. And they go out and lose to Oakland in the first round. So, needless to say, my bracket was just busted wide open right out of the gate. But you hit the nail on the head with the fact that the transfer portal in NIL is just the – when Kentucky's out there with – yes, I know that they're all really good players. They're all really great future NBA players. But a bunch of 18-year-old kids, and sometimes these cats now are, no pun intended, are reclassifying. You know, they should be high school seniors, and they're reclassifying early to go, you know, to go to college early. They're going up against 24-year-olds, 23-year-olds, whatever. There's, if you'd actually have the time, just go look. I'll give an example. Clemson. Clemson's starting five is four seniors and a junior. And, you know, they're sitting here in the Sweet 16. Everybody's shocked they're in the Sweet 16. They're a veteran bunch. There's a lot of these teams that are veteran bunches that are still left here in the Sweet 16. So it's back to the drawing board for Cal and the Cats. You know, it's easy to say, just fire him. You know, people said that a lot about Jimbo Fisher for a while. I think you can get to the point now, you can start making a comparison of Jimbo and Calipari with, you know, Jimbo won a national championship at Florida State, won one national championship. How many national championships Cal won in this deal with Kentucky? One. And he gets all the great recruits, gets all the great players, gets paid all this money, has a buyout larger than the rest of the entire sport, and just keeps losing games he shouldn't be losing. So if I'm the athletic director, I'm sitting down with Cal, just saying, listen, things have to change. They have to change. We want you here. And obviously, again, his buyout is so lucrative that I don't know that Kentucky has it to pay that. They might, but I don't think they do. So they need to sit down with him and just for real have a conversation about that. Things have to change. We've got to get older. We've got to get more experienced. We're freaking Kentucky. I know we can go get all these great high school recruits, but let's take all this NIL money and let's take all of this now and let's go find the best freaking players in the portal and bring them all here and mix them in with two or three freshmen. Because the best player on the floor for Kentucky in the biggest game of the year and some of the biggest games period of the year was Antonio Reeves. Transfer, veteran, senior from Illinois State. So that's the type of cats they need to be bringing into Kentucky.
Yeah, in the first round, 11 lower seeds won games. A lot of them weren't as surprising as others. I mean, Oregon beating South Carolina wasn't necessarily surprising to some. NC State beating Texas Tech. NC State was on a roll. James Madison was a popular 5-12 upset. They beat Wisconsin pretty handily. Grand Canyon, another one, 12-5 upset over St. Mary's. You get to the upper left bracket. What happened to your boys from Auburn? They go up against that Ivy League, who's now 8-2 straight up in first round games in their past 10.
8-2?
Yeah, Yale, ooh, Cornell, Princeton, and Harvard have all won two games apiece in the tournament.
Well, I'll say this. The biggest recipe that you could possibly have for an upset, all of them combined happened in that game. You right out of the gate, Chad Baker-Mazzara, which is the probably the best perimeter versatile defender that Auburn has. They're arguably their second best player overall. Second or third, let's just say third best player. And the dude gets tossed for a flagrant two for retaliating, going down the court, throws an elbow, and hits a guy in the chest. I'm sorry, man, but even in a regular season game, that's a flagrant one, and let's play basketball. They reviewed that forever and called a flagrant two and threw the kid out of the game in the NCAA tournament in March Madness. He shouldn't have done it. It was boneheaded. It was stupid. But that's a flagrant one, and let's play basketball. Next thing is Yale spent about 25 minutes of the 40 in the double bonus in this game and just kept going to the free throw line. And, I mean, Auburn does. They're very physical, and they do foul a lot. They do. A lot of those fouls were fouls. But there were some that just the way the game was officiated, Auburn needed that game to be officiated like the Grand Canyon, Alabama game was officiated. But it was not. It was officiated closely, and there were a lot of touch fouls that were called. But there were also a lot of fouls that were fouls that got called. But so, again, 25 of the 40 minutes, one of your, in the double bonus, one team. one of your best players gets thrown out of the game really early on in the game. And then you have a guy that goes off for his career high and is doing your typical March Madness one shining moment deal that is just raining threes from everywhere on the court. All of those things happened in that game.
Auburn was still up by 10 with 7 minutes to go.
Right. And I thought that when that happened, I said, okay, they've got this in the bag. And then they started turning the ball over, kept fouling, you know, kept sending yell to the line with no clock, you know, being ran. It was very shocking. I was actually just as shocked with that one as I was Kentucky-Oakland, because this Auburn team was a very good basketball team this year. They had the goods, and they just, again, in March, what makes this beautiful, just crazy tournament so great is that on any given night, in a one-game winner-take-all scenario, the little guy like Yale can get it done. And they did. And, you know, Bruce Pearl now, he's a hell of a coach. We've had a few years now in a row, though, that they've had some early exits in the tournament with a high seed and a good basketball team. You know, the team that had Jabari a few years ago that got beat by Clemson in the round of 32, they were, I think, a 2 seed in that tournament. It's starting to become a thing that Pearl needs to eliminate, that people are starting to creep up in people's head that, you know, it's Auburn's not really a good tournament team. But I don't know. That to me was a little bit of an anomaly and just was a just upset city in that game. And then we saw what Yale kind of really is the next game against San Diego State. But that was the recipe for an upset was all brewing in that game against them and against Yale.
Yeah, you mentioned it too. The first round, a lot of upsets. Second round, very, very chalky. I mean, out of the 16 games in the second round, only 5 were decided by single digits, which is pretty crazy. And a lot of those, you know, underdogs, they just like Yale, James Madison, they just couldn't sustain it. They just kind of laid eggs in the second round. But that's kind of what you want out of a tournament, honestly. I mean, everyone's been saying it on Thursday and Friday. Give me some upsets. Give me some buzzer beaters. In the second round, give me some chalk. Let's get some good matchups, and we're going to talk about them right now. 15 of the top 22 on the NCAA seed list is left, and 13 of the top 14 teams in KenPom are still left. The only team gone is Auburn. They were one of the teams that we mentioned last episode who could win it with their adjusted offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. There's still 8 of those teams left out of the 16. And so, you know, you're looking for, someone to pick, go back and listen to that episode and we'll give you the list on that one. But let's start talking about these games. First of all, I mentioned, let's don't touch the tournament. However, we've got to do something about the start times for these games. And I mean, I'm living in Eastern time zone in Indiana, unfortunately, which should be on Central time, but that's another topic. But Eastern time zone is just brutal. I mean, I know on Thursday and Friday, you can't really start the games much earlier than 12:15 Eastern, and they're still getting over at 12:30, 1 a.m. That's fine. I mean, sure. On Saturday and Sunday of the second round, it still is just laughable that they start the games at 12:15, but they just do one game at 12:15. So we're just watching one single game, and then we have a 30-minute lull, and then we're watching one other game. And so you have multiple games not going on until 6 p.m. I don't know why they do that, but they do it every single year. And then if you're looking ahead to Sweet 16, these games start at 7:09 p.m. on Thursday night, Eastern time, which means if the game were in exactly 2 hours, the Alabama game would start at 9:39 p.m. Eastern. And then in the East region, UConn plays at 7:39. If that game ran exactly 2 hours, Illinois-Iowa State would start at 10:09 Eastern. 10:09 Eastern in Boston. And let me just tell you, out of the 48 games that have been played so far, not including the first four, 9 of them have been 2 hours or less. That's it. 39 games have been longer than 2 hours. So the chances of that Illinois-Iowa State game tipping off at 10:30 is high. It's very high. I don't know why they do that. I mean, I know that Alabama, they're playing out in L.A., and they can't really start the game much earlier than 4:09 Pacific time, but that's your fault. I mean, you chose the location. What's the difference between 3:30 and 4 o'clock out there? I mean, there's not much difference. And I don't know if NCAA chooses these times. I don't know if it's CBS because they have the rights to it. It's just ridiculous year after year that I mean, there's just absolutely no way. If you're working the next day on Friday, it's going to be really tough to stay up until 12:30, 1 o'clock to catch an Iowa State Illinois game, which should be really good.
Yeah, and then, I got a buddy that's going to be going to the games in Detroit on Friday, and he was saying, like, dude, like, literally the game is going to be tipping off after 10 o'clock. And you know how these CBS games go anyway, with football and with basketball, with all the commercials, all the sponsorships they've got to get in for this NCAA tournament. And then if a game is freaking within 10 points when the final 2 minutes,
Oh, yeah.
it takes like 30, 45 minutes. Like Texas A&M Houston last night legitimately took almost an hour to finish the last minute and a half of that game, with the amount of timeouts, the amount of fouls, and the amount of freaking replays that they
Oh, the
do.
replays
And
are terrible.
the replays are unbelievable. How long do they take on those? No, you're right, man. The scheduling on and the times are pretty brutal. On the Thursday night matchups, let's just start here, kind
Yeah,
of, you know, it.
let's go chronologically. Let's start at 7:09 p.m. out west. Clemson taking on Arizona. Arizona 6.5, 7-point favorite. Arizona really didn't have much trouble with Dayton in the second round. Clemson only underdog to win outright in the second round. Beat Baylor 72-64. They withstood a charge from Baylor late in that game. And then, I mean, first round Clemson just took care of the popular pick New Mexico. And so, man, that's the 6.5, 7 points seems like a lot, but Arizona, they are, I mean, they look a lot different than last year. Obviously, last year they lost to Princeton in the first round, but Kylan Boswell, he was in foul trouble the other day. They still didn't have any issue with him. Caleb Love, transferring to Arizona, was a game changer in the offseason. Omar Ballo, Pelle Larson, I mean, Tommy Lloyd's got those guys rolling.
Yeah, he does, man. And like I said, Caleb Love's a difference maker. He's a dude. He's been through it in the tournament. He's taken Carolina to the national championship game 2 years ago. He's not afraid to take the big shots. But I'll say this about Clemson. Like you said, they just beat the brakes off of a good New Mex squad and then handled Baylor. I mean, I know, like you said, they got a little bit of a charge there from Baylor late. But I mean, Clemson controlled that game, the whole game. And the biggest reason that Clemson is where they are right now, they've played a really good New Mex team and a really good Baylor team, and Baylor's one of the best offensive teams in the country, and they held Baylor to 64 points. Baylor and New Mex combined for 33.5% shooting from the floor against Clemson. And I know some people may say, well, Baylor missed all these open threes or whatever. Still, that's still really good defense that Clemson is putting up. And I said it a minute ago, and I'll say it again. Clemson squad, the starting five, all seniors and one junior. And there are three guys that they only play eight people. The three guys they bring off the bench, freshmen, sophomores. Mix in some minutes there. But and what's scary is they controlled that game against Baylor, and their best player, PJ Hall, only had 11 points and three boards. Their guard play is what kind of, like, I thought would be a little, because again, New Mex has a tandem of guards that are two of the best in the country. Baylor has incredible guard play. So they played two teams back to back. They have really good guard play, and Clemson handled them fine. I mean, Chase Hunter, his last few games for Clemson has stepped up huge. It's a guard for Clemson. I mean, he had 20 points, 6 assists against Baylor. He's had multiple games out of their last 5 or 6 games where he's scoring well above 15 points. Joe Girard, he transferred in from Syracuse, was a huge pickup for Clemson. We talked about him when the year started. I don't know if you remember, but when we did our preseason like thing for college basketball, Clemson was the team that you and I both said that could be kind of a dark horse, them and Wake, to win the ACC outright this year. And a lot of the reason was because Clemson returned everybody basically from a 23-win squad last 20-something win squad last year, and all they did was bring in a transfer that was one of the best players for Syracuse. And Girard is another one. He's had plenty of games here recently where he's scoring in double figures. And so their guard play, they're getting a ton of mileage out of their guards now to add to what PJ Hall does. So, and that's kind of it's kind of a scary underdog right now. I mean, because again, they've played two teams that a lot of people thought that was going to take care of them, and they did really well. But again, Arizona's kind of a different animal with Caleb Love and Ballo and what they're going to put on the floor. But just incredible the defensive effort that Clemson's given, and they're getting a lot of mileage out of their guards that a lot of people thought that couldn't handle it here in the tournament.
All right, let's stay out west. Hit the second game. Your Alabama Crimson Tide taking on your North Carolina Tar Heels.
Hang on, let me explain this real quick. So, growing up as a kid, I was what people would say now is one of the worst fans out there because I had multiple teams that I was a fan of. There's a lot of people at Alabama that can't stand. So Alabama and Auburn growing up, I had a lot of friends in basketball, tons of friends. You were either an Alabama and Auburn fan, obviously, but you were also a big Carolina, Duke, or Kentucky hoops fan because Bama and Auburn were so just street trash for so long. And when you're a little kid, come on, guys. When you're a little kid, you're pulling for winners, okay? You don't know any better. Like when I was a kid, everybody was a Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls fan. Everybody was a Dallas Cowboys and Green Bay Packers fan.
Yep.
And then you get a little older, and then you wise up. And then I went to Bama, graduated from Bama, Bama alum, and became a, you know, I again, pulled for Bama growing up, but I was also a huge Carolina fan. My first college basketball game that I ever attended was a North Carolina NCAA tournament game where they were like an 8 or a 9 seed and took down Stanford 1 seed in the NCAA tournament when they were playing in Birmingham. And I went to multiple North Carolina games growing up. But again, roll tide. I'm a big Bama fan, Carolina fan second. I've never had to deal with this before where they meet at the NCAA tournament. So here we are. My allegiance. I'm wearing the Bama hat now. Roll tide. So on this matchup, I just want your thoughts first, and I'll take it from here. Like, what are you – I was kind of surprised. Now I'm seeing – you know, I saw earlier today – Carolina was only a 3.5-point favorite. Now it's ticked up to about 4.5.
Yeah.
So I think some people kind of agree with me because I was shocked that Carolina was only 3.5. And then my metrics guy, you told me that KenPom only had it at 2, right?
Yeah, KenPom's got it at 2 because those metrics still absolutely love Alabama.
They wear the metrics guys wear Alabama boxers to sleep in.
Yeah, and Alabama, I'm not going to say they had an easy path. Because Grand Canyon is not your typical 12 seed, but they played Charleston and Grand Canyon.
It was a favorable draw. It was. Yeah. I'll admit that. It for
and
sure
I mean,
was.
Even if they had played St. Mary's, I mean, St. Mary's would have been a favorable draw too.
Right. Like San Diego State is a 5 seed. Again, Auburn's draw, like if they would have won, would have had to play San Diego State. If Bama was in that situation and had to play San Diego State, that's just a much tougher game than Grand Canyon, even though Grand Canyon did beat San Diego State earlier in the year when they played.
Yeah, and I just think we watched that Grand Canyon game, and I mean, we both kept saying it. You kept saying it. If they just keep driving to the rack, there's not much that Alabama can do. And Alabama, I mean, we talked about Auburn fouling. Alabama fouls quite a bit too. It's just a matter of what game the officials want to call, and they called a completely opposite game against Grand Canyon. And I think R.J. Davis can drive. I think Elliott Cadeau could drive. I think Armando Bacot might give him some trouble down low because Alabama hasn't played well against big man this year, if I'm getting that right. But I just think
I got some on that here in a second.
Yeah, I just think I mean, you know, like you said, you talked about the senior starters. I mean, 3 senior starters, a junior, and then a freshman point guard for North Carolina. It's just going to be a tough task for Alabama to stay in this game. But with that being said, with the type of offense they have, which is number 4 in the country right now, I mean, they have the ability to keep pace with anybody.
Yeah, they do. So I'll start off with this. I've seen literally every single Alabama game this year, and I've watched a lot of the North Carolina games this year as well because, again, I'm a fan of both teams. So stylistically, this is actually, like, style-wise, a matchup that Bama's fine with. They want to get out and run. They want to play. They don't want to play the San Diego States. We saw that last year. Tennessee is a bad matchup for Alabama. Those type of teams that want to get in the half court, get physical, and kind of bang in the paint are bad matchups for Alabama. Teams that want to run are not. Carolina wants to run. That's just what they've done even since Roy Williams has been there. But you hit the nail on the head a minute ago. Bama's biggest problem is defending the paint. They don't have any rim protection. They don't have any paint presence really at all. You know, they pretty much have, I mean, Grant Nelson. They play a 4-guard lineup with Grant Nelson at the 5. And everybody I know that's Bama fans just rags on Grant Nelson and you know, says he's such a wuss and he's soft down low and stuff. And look, the dude is literally a stretch four that is having to play the five and guard every other team's best center. That's not his fault. He shouldn't be having to do that. But that's what he has to do for us because, I say us, that's what he has to do for Bama because he, and we don't have anybody else that can do that. So the best offensive lineup that Oates can put on the floor is the forward guard lineup with Nelson. So Bama's given up a little bit of defense on that. So with that being said, there's a chance that Armando Bacot, that has averaged pretty much a double-double the last 3 years of his college career, he's had some games where he'll throw up 25 points and 20 boards. That really might happen in this game. He really might just get Nelson, Pringle, whoever else is the bigs, in some serious foul trouble because they just don't stand a chance against him. He is as good as it gets down low. He's experienced. He's carried Carolina before in the tournament. He's had some huge games in the tournament. He's played really well recently. But I expect Bacot to have a really big game for Carolina. And then on the guard front, be interesting with I've already heard that Latrell Wrightsell, you saw him leave the game against Grand Canyon. He's going to be playing Thursday. He'll be back Thursday from what I've read. They expect him to be back. They need him back because he will be the one that more than likely will be matched up with R.J. Davis. He's the best combo guard and the best defending guard, defensive guard that Bama has. He'll be matched up with R.J. Davis, and then Sears will be matched up with the freshman Elliott Cadeau. Elliott Cadeau was a five-star, you know, number two point guard in the country coming out of high school.
He's not going to have to play much defense on him shooting the three because that dude cannot shoot worth anything.
Was just getting ready to say he is less than 20% on the year from the three-point line. But other than that, Carolina's got dudes that can shoot
which
the three.
Which means they'll probably hit half of his threes on Thursday night.
Probably. But this should be another track meet. It should be another up and down. Again, Carolina wants to run. Bama wants to run. It's pretty simple. If Bama wants to stay in this game, they're going to have to be hitting the shots from the outside. And if they don't, it could get ugly. If they do, this could be a war. I think the biggest, you know, I kept looking today, and the biggest difference between these two teams, both are very good offensively. Bama's actually pretty solid at defending the three on the year, but they're so bad at defending the paint, and Carolina's got Armando Bacot, and Carolina's also one of the best rebounding teams in the country, and Carolina's Achilles heel normally is defense as well. They're one of the top 30, and like defensive field goal percentage this year against, you know, opposing offenses, which is not like most Carolina teams. So this Carolina team is defending really well this year. So, you know, rebounding and defense, I think, is the biggest obstacle in this game. It really comes down to if Bama's hitting shots, they can win. If not, it could get ugly.
Let's head out east to Boston to the TD Garden. The first game out there is a rematch from last year's national championship. It's the UConn Huskies against the San Diego State Aztecs. UConn won that game by 17 when they were favored by 7. I mean, this one has a chance to be just another snoozer as well, which UConn has kind of made a habit of in the last 8 games they've played in the tournament. They've won them all by double digits. And there's just, I mean, they just look like a different, they look, their team looks different than every other team I've seen play so far.
Yeah, again, they're going to have to play bad for someone to beat them. Literally everybody. That includes Houston.
They're playing in Boston, and the Aztecs are traveling as far as you could possibly travel. And yeah, it's a home game for UConn.
Yeah, it'll be, like you said, a home atmosphere for UConn. I just could be way off on this, but the fact that it's a 10 – the Aztecs are really good, but golly, they're really good. That's just – they're so well coached. They've got some veteran guys on that squad. You know, when I was watching them against UAB the other day and watching them last night against Yale, those guys, they've got 4 guys on that starting roster that were on that team that led them to the national championship game last year, and they're all still very good. I just feel like style-wise, man, they just play right into what UConn, like, UConn is fine with dealing with. Like, you want to get in the half court and get physical? Sure, so be it. That's why you saw them just beat the brakes off the Aztecs last year in the national championship game. I expect a little bit more of the same, like you said, in this one. You know, I will be very shocked if this game is within a 5 or 6 point game.
It's a spread of 11 right now.
Right, which is, and that says all you need to know. And I also think, too, that odds makers are scared to death of UConn. You know, like your favorite saying that I like, and Mike can't make that line high enough. I mean, they're just beating teams to death,
I
dude.
mean, yeah, KenPom has it as 8-point spread, but he had the Northwestern game as a 10-point spread yesterday, and the line was still at 14 or 15.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a great example is, and I know the games were on the road, like, or at Northwestern when this happened, but still, Northwestern was on the same floor with Purdue and Illinois and beat them.
They went to overtime at Mackey, by the way.
Yeah. And they looked like a high school team.
Yeah.
Like a bad high school team against UConn. And Northwestern's good and well coached. And UConn just, God, I mean, it was, every time I looked up at that score, I didn't even have the game on. I was watching the other two games because it was just so ugly. So, yeah, I mean, two Sweet 16 teams, Illinois and Purdue, Northwestern beat those teams. And UConn made Northwestern like a bad high school team.
Yep. And the game after that probably has a good chance of being the game of the night. Of course, it starts at, midnight. But Illinois plays Iowa State, and that game, anywhere you look, -1.5, -2 for Iowa State being favored in the game. Going back to UConn, you talked about how they're happy just playing in half court, being physical, whatever. If they were to match up against Illinois in the Elite Eight, that would be Illinois would want to push the pace. They want to fly. But again, we saw that last year in the Elite Eight when UConn played Gonzaga. Gonzaga wanted to do the same thing. UConn beat him by 20. So I think UConn can play really any style of basketball.
And it makes him so great.
Yeah, Dan Hurley's got those guys clicking. But Illinois, Iowa State, it's a contrast of, I mean, the two styles in this game. Illinois, number one offense. Iowa State, the number one defense. And then you switch to the other side of the ball when Iowa State has the ball. Iowa State, 49th ranked offense, but Illinois, 92nd ranked defense. So this one is going to be a very stark contrast of styles. I'm surprised a little bit that the total is 146.5. It seemed high, really high for an Iowa State game, especially when they're favored in. We saw them play Houston a couple times, and you know, it was in the 120s, 130s. But Terrence Shannon is on another level right now. Marcus Damask. I mean, I hate to say it, but even Coleman Hawkins. Iowa State, though, they've got Taman Lipsey.
Wait, well, you're not a Hawkins fan?
No, nobody's a Hawkins fan except for Illinois fans. But this one should be a good one if you can stay up for it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you may not agree with this as an Indiana fan, but as just a hoops fan for me, it's good to see the flying Illini. Playing some good ball again. Brad Underwood got the flying Illini back in the Sweet 16, hooping again.
It's interesting that like Brad Underwood and Matt Painter, Rick Barnes, Greg McDermott, Shaka Smart. I mean, they're all kind of labeled as like March Madness jokers. Yeah. And they're all in the Sweet 16.
Every one of them. And dude, some of the questions that Painter had to answer.
Yeah.
Heck, golly, dude.
Yeah.
He handled it better than I would have. But old TJO, how you pronounce his name? You're better than me at all that.
TJ Otzelberger.
Otzelberger. I'm gonna still call him TJO though. Oh, TJO for Iowa State. What a hell of a coach, dude. He's legit as it gets. Brad Underwood came from Stephen F. Austin to Illinois, and he's had the Illini rolling. There was like this whatever, like what was like a KenPom graphic or something like that got sent out today that showed the combinations of offense and defense, and Iowa State was at the very top of minus offense and plus defense. And then on the very bottom right, it was plus offense and minus defense. And Illinois was at the very top of this, like you said, just as contrasting of styles as you can possibly get. And part of me keeps going back to the fact in this tournament, the teams that are prone to go on those giving up 10-0 runs because they can't score, going those crazy scoring droughts. Because Iowa State's defense is so good, maybe Illinois is the one that goes on the scoring droughts in this one. But history would say that the teams that are poorly ranked in KenPom and everything else on the offensive side of the ball, that's the team that has the more of the chance to go on those scoring droughts because they aren't as good as on offense. So that would be Iowa State in this situation. And as good as Illinois is on offense and the weapons that they've got on offense, I'm interested to see in the tournament here if offense is going to be what wins out over defense in this situation.
Let's move on to Friday evening. Game tip times are still at the same time, but it's a Friday night, so you might be able to stay up a little later. Let's start in the South region in Dallas, Texas. First game, the Wolf Pack of North Carolina State taking on Marquette and NC State, obviously the worst team ranked in KenPom left in this tournament. They're the 11 seed taking on Marquette, but they had no problem with Texas Tech, and they won a really good game with a really hot Oakland team. Marquette, on the other hand, I mean, they struggled a little bit with Western Kentucky, and then they just really could never put away Colorado. Colorado was probably underseeded. We talked about that, but they just couldn't quite put them away until they won by four. Marquette is favored in this game by 6.5, and it's in Dallas, so, I mean, not really an advantage for the fans, you know, either way. But if those Houston fans and those Duke fans start trickling in at halftime or so, NC State keeps it close, you know how it goes. They're going to start, it's going to be 75% in there for NC State. And it's going to start feeling like a road game for Marquette. But they've still got Tyler Kolek. They've still got Cam Jones. They've still got Oso Godaro. Oso Godaro versus DJ Burns. Now, Lowe is going to be fun. DJ Burns, I mean, he's something to watch, man.
Can you believe that Shaka decided to, you know, ruin the Marquette, ruin the Eddie Lampkin versus DJ Burns matchup that all the folks wanted to see? I mean, come on now. That would have been the heavyweight, like, sumo wrestling fight of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. But again, like, I mean, it's another – NC State's another team. Four seniors and one junior in the starting lineup.
Yep. Yep. And I don't know why they weren't any better during the year, but whatever. It doesn't matter. But I think it's hilarious, too, that in the contract for NC State's coach that, you know, if he made the NCAA tournament or something, he automatically
gets – If he won the ACC tournament, he got 2 years. And so
– Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a Kevin Keats fan, you're thinking, wow, you got hot for 5 days and you're going to be stuck with us for two more years. Are you kidding me?
I got to admit, man, some of these coaches' contracts crack me up. That's a good one. That's a good one. Win the ACC tourney and you get 2 years added onto your contract. But, you know, we're fans here too, man. And I have to admit, I love Shaka Smart, dude. Like, that would be a guy I'd love to play for. And that, you know, I would, if I've got kids now and I'd love my son to play for or something. I mean, he just seems like an awesome dude. Love his passion. Love the energy his teams play with. I was happy to see that he kind of got the monkey off his back and got out of the first weekend to get to the Sweet 16 with Marquette.
Yeah, but he still struggles when he's a favorite. He's so much better when he's an underdog. I mean, yeah, they pulled away from Western Kentucky there at the end of the game, but I mean, yeah, they didn't cover against Colorado. That's why the only way
you
I
should be happy, but you should be happy about that, man. You threw out the Buffs plus
I
four.
I did throw out the Buffs.
Four in the hook. You had the Buffs plus four in a hook.
And that's the reason. I mean, that's the main reason I can't. If you can wait a little bit and people see that two next to Marquette and they start betting them, you know, closer to the game time on Friday, that line will tick up to 7, 7.5, and you could probably grab the Wolf back there. I do think that for me, that's the only way to go in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't back Marquette as a favorite here in this spot. And, you know, I'll say, too, you know, DJ Horn, the guard for NC State. I mean, I know Marquette's got good guard play, but DJ Horn would have to take a back seat to those guards for Marquette. So, you know, it'd be an interesting one there, man, no doubt about it. But I have to admit, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Marquette move on to the next round.
All right, let's get to just three absolutely stellar matchups. So we'll move on to the next matchup in the South. Number one seed Houston Cougars against the number four seed. The Evil Empire is back in the Sweet 16. The Duke Blue Devils had no issues with Vermont or James Madison.
What a mismatch, man, against JMU. I'm an idiot for taking JMU plus 7.5 there.
I know. I mean, that's just kind of – it's a different ball game in March Madness in the regular season. You want to believe in these teams, and they look hot, and – you're just thinking, why? I mean, if they played in November, why would I ever take JMU to cover against Duke? And the answer is you wouldn't. But you do in March because it's March Madness. But this game, man, Houston suffered a little scare. And you called it. I mean, Texas A&M said, you said they'd be in for a street fight. And they were. I mean, they snapped out of it. I mean, they were down by 12. You know, that's exactly what happened in the Houston A&M game in the regular season in December, is Houston was up by, you know, 9 or 10 points. And then, again, another team like Iowa State that can go on a drought and not score for a while, That's what happened. And then, man, the foul trouble that they got into. If that game went into double overtime, Houston wouldn't have had any players left. They had a walk-on come in the game and drill a clutch free throw to kind of ice the game against A&M. But, I mean, Jamal Shedd was out. L.J. Crier was out. And Houston's not going to get many points on possessions without those two guys. But Duke, on the other hand, yeah, total mismatch against James Madison. Jared McCain just absolutely came out of the gates. 6 3-pointers in the first half. They've got a solid, well-rounded team, and this Duke team actually plays pretty solid defense. I mean, they're 18th in the country in defense, which is surprising for a Duke team for the past couple of years, but they're solid. I mean, Mark Mitchell, Kyle Filipowski, Jeremy Roach, they're a solid bunch.
Yeah, they are. Now, so
Houston favored by 4.5, by the way.
Yeah, they are. Cougs by 4.5 in this one. So Duke last year had their season ended by a team that likes to muck it up, get physical, in Tennessee, and they held Duke to 52 points in that game. The knock on Duke is they're soft. That's what people think of Duke. They think they're soft, and it's a bad rap to have when you're going up against the Cougs because they are the bad boys of basketball. But I will say the emotion and the part of 18 to 22-year-old kids, if I don't know if John Shire's preaching this or not, but if I'm him, I'm all week long telling them you're soft. You know, you are soft. You know, we saw how your season ended last year. Everybody thinks that you're not man enough to go against Houston this week. And the fire that Duke came out with, I know it's JMU, but still they came out with an attitude in that game. And they're going to need every freaking bit of that against this Houston squad. But could be way off here, but I think this is another one. This is just a terrible matchup, man, for Duke against this Houston squad because Houston really is. They're a different level of just physicality, intensity. I mean, dude, again, they're freaking scary, dude, on that court. And that's why I thought A&M could give them a game because A&M is one of the few teams that can put up kind of a fight physicality-wise against Houston. I mean, if you're right now calling it, I mean, I think Shedd and that Houston bunch, every team, man, it seems like that wins a national championship just about has that one really big scare in March Madness that they have to get through and have to overcome. Houston did it last night. I don't know if they're going to win it or not, but all the adversity that they went through last night in that game against A&M, literally I can't imagine a worse situation as far as Jamal Shedd, the first team All-American point guard, goes out of the game because he fouls out, and they bring in that white boy that looks like he was a chemist, like looks like a chemistry major. What was his name again, Tyler?
Ryan Elvin.
Ryan Elvin.
6'1", 170.
6'1", 170, and I think 170 is doing it, you know, generous. Comes in for Shedd in overtime and crunch time and hits that big free throw there at the end. So they definitely overcame their adversity and got through it. I just think they're a matchup nightmare for Duke, and I think they're going to bully them, and I think they're going to push them around, and I think Houston's going to take care of business here. And, you know, at the moment, as far as against the spread on this night, that's definitely the one I like the most at this moment, sitting right here right now.
Yeah, playing in Dallas, Texas, too. I mean, I know Duke's got a national following, but Houston should have the majority of the fans there. But let's move on to the Midwest region. First game, Zags against the Boilermakers. That was seriously impressive what Purdue did yesterday against Utah State, winning that game by 39.
They couldn't have played any better.
Yeah, couldn't have played any better. I mean, they were hitting shots from everywhere. Everybody was hitting shots. Those guys who came in off the bench to, you know, play mop-up duty 5 minutes left in the game, they just seemed like every time I looked up, they were hitting a three. Because yeah. CBS made us watch that game and only that game. It was just a blowout. Utah State got flustered in the first half. They felt like they got a couple calls against them, and it really got in their heads, and they lost it. They just absolutely lost it. But
Danny Sprinkle had on his Washington shirt, his Washington Husky shirt, underneath his underneath his coaching outfit that he was wearing yesterday.
Yeah, he was ready to go. But he gave a good pregame speech, but to no avail. The Zags, on the other hand, took care of business. No issue with McNeese State. We thought that would be a popular 12-5 pick. No issue with McNeese. And then, again, two back-to-back 21-point victories over McNeese and Kansas.
Question for you, Tyler. Is Mark Few one of the three best coaches in college basketball?
I mean, just not even looking into any of the data and everything, just how long he's been at Gonzaga. How many Sweet 16s?
Nine straight
Sweet 16s, which I think ties like the Duke teams from the mid-2000s, which did that, maybe one other team before that. I mean, yeah, he's got to be. I mean, and to give him 6 days to prepare for this Purdue team, and a lot of these big guys, I mean, I know the Zags got Graham Ike. He's 6'9", 240. He's a big dude, all right? He's going to pound with Edie. But you get Braden Huff in there. You get Ben Gregg in there. I talked about him last episode. Those guys can step out, and when Ike's not in the game, they're going to step out, and they're going to take some shots, and that's going to draw Edie out of the paint. And what's Purdue going to do then, you know? You got Ryan Nimhard versus Braden Smith. That's a heck of a matchup. You've also got, you know, a little bit of a backstory here, just a, you know, rumor floating around last year that the Zags had offered Braden Smith a sizable amount of NIL money to go play Gonzaga, and he turned him down, probably for one last ride with Edie. So we'll see if the Zags go back to the well this offseason, but that's going to be a great matchup. But if Purdue is going to hit shots, if they get the ball down to Edie, they kick it out to Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith and Lance Jones and Mason Gillis, and those guys are knocking down shots, I mean, they're going to be tough to beat.
Yep. And once again, the Zags, juniors and seniors across the board. And they have a freshman that comes off the bench that, you know, he's solid as can be, Braden Huff. He comes off the bench, gives him solid minutes. But, yeah, man, I mean, with Mark Few, with multiple days to prepare, with a team that's just playing with house money now. And what's impressive is, I mean, Ryan Nimhard's probably their best player. He has 5 points against Kansas, and they beat the brakes off the Jayhawks. So as far as brands are concerned, basketball brands.
Were we surprised that the Zags beat the Jayhawks at all?
Not at all, my friend.
Not on this podcast.
Not on this podcast. We were max bets on the Zags on Saturday. But I'm really excited about this game because you hit the nail on the head with EK, Ben Gregg, some of the big men for Zags banging with Edie, and the fact that they can kind of pull him away from the bucket a little bit on the offensive end. Zags multiple times when EK's not on the floor, they have 5 guys on the floor that can shoot the ball from the outside. So, you know, they're about as skilled as it gets. And this is going to be a war. I think Gonzaga gets Purdue all they want in this game.
Right now, I mean, the line's 5, 5.5, Purdue's favorite, obviously. They played twice. They played once this season. They played once last season, and Purdue beat them by 10 and by 18. And so if you think back to the Maui Invitational, Purdue played Gonzaga, they played Tennessee, and they played Marquette. And Purdue's next 3 games could be against Gonzaga, Tennessee, and Marquette, if the chips fall.
Didn't even think about that. Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, they beat Gonzaga by 10 in the Maui. They had a war with Tennessee. They won that game by 4, and then they beat Marquette by 3. Those are all really good games. So it's kind of weird that they stuck the whole Maui field in Purdue's region like that, you know, for rematches and everything. But, you know, the NCAA is going to do what the NCAA is going to do. But it should be a heck of a game, 7:39 tip-off. And then the one after that, God, man, this might be one of the ones I'm looking forward to the most. And that's Creighton versus Tennessee.
Woo!
Right now, Tennessee's looking like a 2.5, 3-point favorite over Creighton. And we kind of have talked about these teams, but only in the fact of, like, okay, which team can really give Purdue the best game? And I kind of thought it was Creighton just with Kalkbrenner and Trey Alexander, Baylor Shireman. I think they would match up well. They would run. And Tennessee, I mean, as impressive as they are, that game against Texas, I mean, they were hitting absolutely nothing. But like you said, and like you mentioned, Dalton Knecht is here now. He transferred in. They did not have him last year. He transferred in.
That Texas game is the game that Rick Barnes loses every tournament. Every tournament. They shot horrible. Well, I think they were like 3 for 20-something.
3 of 25, I believe.
Yeah, from the three-point line. They were awful in that game.
Well, I will tell you, talk about Rick Barnes.
3 for 25.
I will tell you about Rick Barnes. After not covering against Texas, Dating back to the 2003 Final Four, Rick Barnes teams are now 2-13 against the spread as a favorite after the round of 64. And they've lost 9 of the 14 games outright. Last six games, I mean, 0-6 ATS. So, again, will that trend stand, or will Dalton Knecht have to come in and save the day against the high-flying Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for Creighton, you know, playing in the Big East like they do, and they play a tough non-conference, too. The physical, Tennessee is one of those teams that they bring a different style of, they bring a different physicality than most teams give you in a basketball game. I mean, it's, you might as well put on the pads. And you look at Tennessee's guys, there's some grown freaking men out there. That is just what Barnes teams do. They rebound, they D you up, they body you, they wear on you. They're in your grill for, you know, for both halves, every second of every half. You know, we know that Creighton wants to get out and run and high fly and shoot the three. But Creighton has played the UConns, you know. They've played some teams in the Big East that play a similar, you know, want to play a little bit of physicality themselves. So, you know, it'll be interesting. But I'm with you. I think this, again, this could be, I'm probably the most excited for this one as I am just, you know, other than my, of course, my boys, Bama game. I'm just excited about this one as I am any game. In this Sweet 16, you know, Tennessee's got some bigs, but I mean, Kalkbrenner's probably the biggest difference maker overall in this game, other than Dalton Knecht. I mean, who's Creighton going to put on Knecht?
I mean, Creighton, they don't play a lot of defense.
No, I mean, Cousinard for Oregon dropped 32 on them, and
yeah, I mean, they're top
Dante
25
dropped
defense.
28.
Yeah, both these teams are one of the 18 or two of the 8 teams, you know, according to the KenPom metrics that could do it. So I won't dog on Creighton's defense that much. But I mean, if you're going to put someone on Dalton Knecht, I mean, he's 6'6". It's probably going to have to be, you know, probably Baylor Shireman. I mean, he's 6'7". I mean, I guess you could put the more athletic Trey Alexander on him. I mean, they're going to switch on him a lot. They're going to put a lot of different guys on him, and they're going to make, you know, Jonas Adu and Josiah Jordan James, a lot of those seniors, beat him.
Yeah.
Greg McDermott's a heck of a coach. He'll have a plan.
Yeah, I was going to say, the fact that McDermott's got this much time to prepare for Tennessee as well, because Tennessee is going to be who they are. They're not going to do anything different. They're going to be exactly who they are. But I'm just intrigued to see if this is one of those situations, again, where Tennessee has trouble scoring, but they've got that dude and Dalton Knecht that pulls them through it.
Well, that's it for the Sweet 16, folks. Looking ahead to the Elite Eight. If you're lucky, you know, keep on the lookout. We may decide to do an episode to preview the Elite Eight matchups a little bit. But on Saturday, those will get kicked off at 6:09 and 8:49 on Saturday night. And then Sunday at 2:20 and 5:05, all times are Eastern. And the Final Four, obviously, 6:09, 8:49. And then don't look now, but NCAA has already got it posted on their website that national championship game is going to tip off at a bright and early 9:20 p.m. Eastern time.
You're so salty on this.
Some of us have lives the next day. I mean, I don't understand why they do the things they do, but, you know, it is what it is, and the NCAA is going to do what the NCAA does and continue to mess things up. You got anything else?
No, man, last thing. You said it earlier, I'm going to say it again. If this Sweet 16, if we get the amount of just battles and close games that I think that we're going to get, this is why that people that watch college basketball on a consistent basis love it when we get the big boys matching up against each other in the Sweet 16, because we want to see the UConns and the North Carolinas and the Illinois and the Iowa States and the Zags and Purdue, Duke, Houston, blah, blah, blah. We want to see that. We want to see these teams that we see all year long be some of the best teams in the country get a chance to actually match up against each other in a one-game winner-take-all freaking scenario. And that's what we get here in this Sweet 16 on Thursday and Friday night. So enjoy, folks. It's going to be some incredible, incredible high-level competitive basketball being played this week.
Yep. Yeah, like you said, enjoy it. We got four games on Thursday, four games on Friday. Two Saturday, two Sunday, and then after that, you just got four teams left and three games left to play. So 15 total games left, and then we got nothing to do until, you know, August 24th when we start talking about football again. So appreciate you guys listening as always. Again, follow us on social media. Keep up to tabs with the March Madness bracket pool. We appreciate you guys subscribing and checking out YouTube and all that stuff. So again, enjoy the games, and we will see you next time.